This is Be the Story. There are lots of great books and other resources that'll teach you how to make good characters in your fiction. But my favorite step-by-step guide is still Holly Lyle's Create a Character Clinic. This week on Be the Story, I'm going to give a brief overview of the Create a Character Clinic and run through the 7 aspects of character creation and show you an example character that I created using this great tool. That's all right ahead on Be the Story. Welcome to Be the Story. I'm Tim King. This is a big episode today, and I'm actually a little behind schedule in producing it, so I'm going to get right to the feed, all the posts that have been on BeTheStory.com over the past week. Firstly, last Tuesday of Stories and Wine, I was listening to Grape Radio, where an enthusiasm for wine gets personal. I happen to be an amateur wine geek as well as a story geek. And in one of the episodes of Grape Radio called The Pinot Showdown, this is actually a 4-part episode that came about because some listeners were very upset about some of the things that were said on a previous interview. Well, that's kind of the enthusiasm or passion that I sometimes feel about stories. Also on Tuesday, because Tuesday was Valentine's Day, a tiny little post of some good stuff that I ran across in the blogosphere regarding Valentine's Day. Paula B. over at The Writing Show interviewed Susan Jeffers, the author of The Feel the Fear Guide to Lasting Love, and Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And she had a lot of, I thought, really great stuff to say about love. Also, Jim Saldog Sullivan from my neck of the woods wrote a little piece about his first kiss that was really entertaining to read. And I also engaged in a little bit of self-promotion and put up a link to an essay that I wrote a couple of years ago for Valentine's Day, entitled Love Through the Eyes of an Idiot. I actually kind of like it when something that I wrote years ago, I come back to it today and read it, and it still seems good, and I still like it. That's a good feeling. I just wish it happened more frequently. On Wednesday, I finished the novel Sin and Vengeance by C.J. West. It was okay, but not gripping. I didn't finish the last chapters and probably would not read it again, but I posted my review of the novel. Thursday's Be the Story Spotlight was on Charlie Chaplin's City Lights, which is one of the most loved romantic movies of all time. You know, and this movie, it still holds a charm, even for young people of our generation, or my kids' generation, rather. On Friday, The Legacy of the Story Game. They say a game is not a movie. Well, I disagree. The best games, in my opinion, are better than movies. Not that you actually care about what I think. But there's definitely some difference between people like me who play games and enjoy them for the stories, and people like the traditional gamers who play games and enjoy them because of the gameplay. I mean, I like gameplay myself, too. But it doesn't move me like a story. It doesn't involve me like a story does. On Saturday, The Birth of a Story Thread. This is a little piece about possibilities in story and also how they bring to life an interactive story like a story game. Lastly, on Sunday, moving between characters in omniscient point of view. If you remember when I read Spellbound by Nora Roberts, one of the things that irritated me about that novella was that she wafted from character to character. We're in his viewpoint, we're in his mind, hearing the things that he's thinking, and then suddenly we're in her mind, hearing the things that she's thinking. It disoriented me. Orson Scott Card, in his book, Characters and Viewpoint, gives an example of doing this, an example that actually works. Okay, right after this short break, we're going to be back and talk about Holly Lyle's Create a Character Clinic, and we'll create a character with it. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Ron from Griddle Cakes Radio. Are you looking for a family, work-safe podcast that'll make you smile? If so, swing by griddlecakes.com. Once there, you'll hear things such as a musician's trade organization threatening to sue Thomas Edison over his phonograph record machine.
They've made their living this way their entire careers, and you, Mr. Edison, you have taken this living away.
Yeah. I'm sorry you feel that way.
Well, we can't sit back and allow this piracy to go on any longer. Here.
What's this?
It's a cease and desist letter. You are to stop manufacturing phonograph record machines immediately.
You're kidding, right?
Am I on candid camera?
Or, did you ever wonder what animals actually do at night?
Wait. No. Cut. 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 Stop. What are you doing? You sound like a bunch of animals.
But we are animals.
But don't you see? We don't have to be. We can be much better than animals. We can be musicians.
Griddle Cakes Radio. Exploring the lost art of audio storytelling. Check us out at www.griddlecakes.com.
Welcome back to Be the Story. We're talking about characters. We're going to create a character, a fictional character. We're going to try to make him seem as realistic as possible using Holly Lyle's Create a Character Clinic. So let's start at the beginning. What makes characters real? Well, in a story, what makes a character seem real is that he has some need that he needs met. All characters have compelling needs. And if you can't think of a compelling need to give your character, you can always look at Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So Wikipedia has a pretty good article regarding Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And I'll put a link to that in this week's blog entry on BeTheStory.com. Basically, Maslow theorized that there are five levels of human need. And in his theory, the lowest levels are more basic, more fundamental. We have to meet those first, and only after we've met those can we proceed to seek the higher levels of need. So here they are, very briefly. At the very bottom of this pyramid that we're building, the very bottom of the pyramid, there are physiological needs, the need to breathe, the need to eat and drink, the need to dispose of bodily wastes, the need to sleep, the need to be warm enough to survive. On top of that are needs of safety, security, the ability to make a living, safety from violence, the health of the body. On top of that are built the need to be loved and the need to belong and the need to love others as well. These include emotionally based relationships like friendship, sexual intimacy, family relationships. Then we have the need to be respected and to respect others, the need for self-esteem. If a person has an inferiority complex or is a snob, that might indicate some imbalance between his ability to respect others and his ability to respect himself. And then at the very top of the pyramid, we have the need for self-actualization and self-transcendence. This is the need to do what you do best. The need, for example, I'm a musician, I have to play music. I'm a writer, I must write. I am a creative person, I must create. A person has to do what is in his being in order to be happy. Now, this theory, as a psychological theory, it has its detractors. Not everyone agrees that this is a valid model of human behavior. But regardless of whether or not it's a good psychological theory, in terms of story ideas, if you need story ideas, it's still a good list to go through. Just take Maslow's pyramid, put it up on the wall, throw a dart at it if you need the root of a story idea. What's more, these are all needs that most people have or can understand. And so if you draw your character from this list, you'll probably have a better chance of making that character more understandable to your readers, to your audience, and thus more sympathetic. So the Create a Character Clinic starts by exploring a character's compelling need. Every character needs something. Either we pursue our needs or we try to avoid them. We try to get away from them. Now, the Create a Character Clinic has lists of questions you can ask regarding your fictional character. And as you answer these questions, you'll gain insight into who this character is. So for the first section, which is need, pursuit, and avoidance, we see questions such as, what is the character's compelling need? Does he pursue it or does he flee it? If he pursues it, has he experienced this before? Has he caught what he pursues? Or does he merely imagine what it's like? And if he imagines it, does reality have much in common with his imagination, with his dream? Or, alternatively, if he actually has caught it before, how did he lose it? So there are lists of questions that help you explore your character. They help you explore your character through 7 areas of character development. The first is need, pursuit, and avoidance, which I just read a few questions from. Then work and play. Past, present, and future is the third. Friends, enemies, and lovers is the fourth. Life and death. Culture, religion, and education. And lastly, moral stance. So those are the 7 areas that the Create a Character Clinic covers. Boy, that's a little bit of alliteration there. For need, pursuit, and avoidance, here's what I ended up writing for my fictional character. And remember, I was writing this, had no idea what my character was going to be like. Well, character wants a stable job and life. He wants security for himself and his family. He wants to get up every morning at 6, shave and shower, get on the train, work until 5, eat dinner, and so forth. A nice, predictable routine. He's been doing this, working at the same job, for the past 20 years, ever since he was 23 years old. His first job after college was a startup. Things looked good there for about 12 months, and then the company floundered, and Character was one of the first to be laid off. He was angry and bitter. He looked for work for almost a year before he found a job, this time with a large inner-city firm. Size for him meant stability, and seniority in the organization, and status meant stability as well. So he worked towards a management job. He showed his value to the company. He even undercut those around him if they got in his way. And he promised himself he would never go through unemployment ever again. Now, he's married with three children, and he cares not only for himself and his own stability, but for his family's as well. He's a middle manager at his firm. However, his company merges with another, and now he fears being laid off. And his fears actually come to pass. He does get laid off. A friend and colleague of his, who we'll call Friend, get it, Character and Friend, those are their names for now. So Friend is someone he knew from his first job, and they've kept in touch with each other. Friend knows what Character went through and how he feels, because they were in it and went through it together. So that's basically how the instrument works. There are a bunch of questions. You force yourself to answer them. You can generate creative ideas about your character and provide depth to him so that when you're ready to sit down and write your story, you know who this person is, what motivates him, and so forth. Let's look at the next character point, which is work and play. People are more than just their compelling needs. Now, looking at how they work and play does not really tell you who they are, but it does shed some light on who they are. Now, a lot of these lists of questions, when you're reading through the list, or at least when I'm reading through the list, and Holly Lyle, also in her notes, recommends that if you're going through these lists of questions and other related questions occur to you, well, answer them too. Write about it. And in particular, always answer the question, why does he do what he does? Because this will tell you more about his inside character, the character inside, the person inside, what motivates him, right? If you can answer why he does the thing he does, then you can understand what motivates your character. So here's what I wrote regarding work and play. Character acquired his current job when Friend interviewed at the company and decided the job wasn't for him. Friend recommended Character, who eventually got the job. From there, he stepped onto the management ladder. Now he leads a management team. He demands consistent results from those under him and works hard to get those results and to provide consistent results to his manager. He does this because he wants to look good and show results in order to further his career. Makes sense. His direct reports appreciate his effort, although he rubs some of them the wrong way. His manager loves it when he delivers, of course, but hates it when his plans fall short, even though he always knows far ahead of the deadline whether his team will be able to make the stated goals. Character has a natural talent for administration, but he needed to learn how to inspire those under him to get results. He also needed to learn how to communicate these results to his manager. Friend coached him in much of this, and Character's determination gave him the energy to bear through mistake after mistake. He also picked up a number of more unsavory skills, such as the ability to understand and to undercut his competitors when necessary. These skills he rationalizes as necessary to cut through the red tape. Unfortunately, he has also made some enemies in the organization, political enemies, which is what ultimately gets him laid off, despite his ability to deliver results. His interest in government politics grew out of his ambitions to climb the corporate ladder. At first, he read books on politics and warfare and applied these lessons to his corporate life. But government politics is still a passion for him. He reads a number of newspapers and frequently writes letters to the editor. He also volunteers in local politics when a candidate runs who especially excites him. The local political party has even asked him to run for office, but he's always refused since he has had seniority and stability in his job and doesn't have time to work in management and in politics at the same time. The next category is past, present, and future. This is everything we've done, everything we're doing, and everything we want to do. What we've done in the past helps to define us, and usually we cannot escape our past. And likewise, what we're doing today always affects what we're going to do tomorrow. We're going to give the most attention to detail regarding the character's present, because that's where the story actually occurs. And so this is where the bulk of the story ideas are going to take place, or at least where they're going to spring from. Okay, so characters, past, present, and future. In his first job, character was laid off when his employer, a new upstart company, went under. He was out of work for a year and came to loathe small startups as unstable. And he also came to think of bigness, politics and bureaucracy and everything that goes along with them, as being a good thing. He worked toward moving up the ranks in that environment in order to assure his own personal stability and success. And he considered that whole chain of events to be positive. He learned to be an overachiever, or at least to appear one, and he received both public recognition and private accolades for his accomplishments. He never imagined that his own aspirations would end up being his downfall. Even now, having been dismissed from this position, he doesn't blame his own ambitions. Rather, he blames his political enemies that he made within the company, with an obligatory jab at himself for not seeing it coming. He could improve his future chances for happiness by realizing that power is not all it's cracked up to be. This is something that Friend knows, but character is not yet ready to listen. He is, however, ready to listen to his friends in government politics. If he has to start all over again, it might as well be in the biggest, most stable organization of all, right? So he is ready to take advantage of the opportunity to run for political office. He believes he can win a local seat and moving from there in a few years to the state or national legislature. He sees himself becoming rich and famous, as well as very successful. His associates in politics support him, of course, but his wife and friend would like him to do something for himself for a change instead of just being a part of the great machine. He's worked and saved for many years, actually, and his personal financial situation is very solvent. He can afford to take a few risks, but he doesn't see this as a viable option. All he sees is this future. Now, his perceived failure, the one that led to his unemployment, it still haunts him. Additionally, his lifestyle has taken its toll on his family life. He hasn't spent as much time with his children as he probably should have. He's worked very hard to provide stability for them, and a few nice things as well. But they would rather spend more time with him, or at least see him happy, and he does not appear to them to be happy. They would also like him to take a little bit of time off, take a vacation, spend some time at home. He doesn't even realize that this home life might be an important component in his life at this point. So he will instead run for public office, and he will come close, but he'll fail. At that point, he'll be devastated and exhausted, and will finally question his own assumptions about what is important. Friend will be a significant part of this, as will his wife. I'm going to take a quick break now, and I'll be right back with the last four character definition categories in Holly Lyle's Create a Character Clinic.
From the worlds between the pages of your favorite book to adventures teetering on the edge of the dice. The pilot's at the helm and our course is set. The dream ship gathers speed across the sea of possibilities. Welcome aboard the Dragonhearth.
I'm Tracy Hickman.
And I'm Laura Hickman. Each month we explore the limitless expanse of creative fiction and games. From the nuts and bolts of writing and publishing to the worlds of our creation.
Whether you're looking for practical advice on plot, character, and setting, or in search of new and distant realms of speculative fiction to explore, you'll find a home here on Dragonhearth.
Join our next voyage through your favorite RSS server or by visiting us at DragonhearthProductions.com. Tracy and Laura Hickman's Dragonhearth, voyages into the realms of imagination.
Welcome back to Be the Story. We're going through Holly Lyle's Create a Character Clinic, Creating a Character. We've done the first three categories of character development, which are need, pursuit, and avoidance, work and play, and past, present, and future. Now let's continue with friends, enemies, and lovers. Stories are about conflict more than anything else. Conflict between people. So you can't just have a character, no matter how deep your character is, unless he enters into conflict with other people and with other things in his surroundings, you don't have a story. So here's what I wrote for his friends, enemies, and lovers. Character hates the person running against him in the political race. More because this person threatens his future chances than anything else. His political opponent, of course, just sees the race as a political race. It's not anything personal. Character's hatred does come out in his political positions. But mostly he keeps his feelings under control. He displays them as passion for his political positions, not as personal antagonism. Because he knows that this latter would mean political suicide. Character's friend. He likes friend, who was laid off from his first job, the same as character, the same job, in fact. They gained camaraderie while they worked together at this job and remained close ever since. They have lunch or dinner occasionally. They attend seminars together, and even they visit each other at home from time to time. Their personal and professional goals have diverged, but they know how not to step on each other's toes, how to be constructive with their comments, and they cherish each other's friendship. Character loves his wife. He had always wanted a family, and she did too, but she is interested in spending quality time with her kids, even if it means that they can't have so many nice things. Ironically, this is the source of fights between them, and it also holds together the family, that she's willing to put in the effort that he has not been putting in. She dreams about making him happy, which irritates him because he thinks he knows what he needs to be happy, namely to provide for her and the kids. He dreams of power as a means to provide for his family, which of course irritates her, but she does not undermine him, at least not initially. The next category is life and death. This I didn't write very much on, but still, asking how your character thinks about his own mortality, how he thinks about death, whether he fears death, and how he treats his life, therefore, you know, these things provide another dimension, another view onto his character. So, character, more than anything else, is afraid of dying in poverty. He also wants to be remembered, however, after he's gone, and this, in fact, was a factor in starting a family. This is why he wanted a family. He wanted someone to be there after he died to remember him. He does not risk his life every day, but he doesn't fear death so much either, as long as he can continue to make a good living. But he unintentionally trivializes the limited time he does have, which he could be enjoying more, and he could be using to establish deeper relationships with his family and even with his friends. Culture, religion, and education is the next category. This is about the character's background, his family, his ethnicity, where he went to school, what he learned, how he learned it, what he believes. Now, character's father was much like a character is. His father valued a stable work ethic, and he saw power and influence as indicators of success. And these ingrained beliefs in character affect his friends and family as much as these beliefs affect him. But character's father also knew how to work in moderation. He knew how to balance work with family, and this is something that character has forgotten, or maybe he never learned it in the first place. After character graduated from high school, he went to college to learn business. His first job was in marketing. His parents were very proud of him, and after he got laid off, they helped him stay on his feet while he was unemployed, looking for work, pointed him at odd jobs and so forth. But this long job search and, you know, going from odd job to odd job, this whole life wore on him. His education and disposition favored working a steady job in a larger organization, and none of the things he learned in college prepared him for having a family or even for politics or leadership. These things are things he had to learn later on, and some of them he still hasn't learned. Character is non-religious. He's not an atheist. He's not agnostic. He's not anything. He doesn't have time for religion or religious arguments. Maybe actually this is one of the reasons he fails as a politician. Don't know yet. Anyway, he does not discuss religion with friend. He does not discuss it with his family because they have a spiritual life, and this would be a point of contention between them. So he basically avoids this particular issue. The last category is moral stance. Very briefly, this is about how our character chooses right from wrong. It's how he behaves when no one's looking, what he does when he knows he won't get caught, or the converse, how he acts when he is being watched. How does that differ from what he does in the privacy of his own mind? Here's what I wrote. Character will do anything he thinks that will get him further ahead. Now, usually this means pleasing others, so he limits his behavior to that which is socially acceptable. Occasionally, however, this means stabbing his opponents in the back. Of course, we already knew these things about him. I was actually kind of surprised, and pleased, too, at how much of his moral stance was fleshed out in the previous questions, the previous categories. Now, believe it or not, this only brings us about halfway through the Create a Character Clinic. That's just section one. Section two is about bringing the characters to life. And I'm not going to go into this in too much detail, but basically, in various areas, we ask the character in kind of a virtual interview to tell us about various parts of his life or whatever. So we might ask our particular character here, whom have you hurt by pursuing power, pursuing success in the way that you have, and see what he says. We can ask him to take us on a tour of his workplace. Or we can look at what he does at work and what he says and see how they differ. And so forth and so on. Section 3 of the Create a Character Clinic is called The Sins of Characterization and How to Commit Them Right. Holly Lyle goes over three categories of sins: sins of exposition, sins of dialogue, and sins of action, with individual sins listed. And for each one, she explains what the sin is, how it's usually committed, and how you avoid it, or even how to turn the liability into an asset. So basically, in order to create deep three-dimensional characters, we want to look at the characters from a number of different perspectives. We want to consider aspects of the character that may not have a direct relation to, you know, whatever the story idea is, because these things can give us even more ideas that can enhance the story. I know when I started to write about this character, I had no idea how it was going to turn out, and by the end, I found myself writing things that I had not even imagined at the beginning. And I've actually used this a couple of times going through it for character ideas. Holly Lyle's Create a Character Clinic is a $9.95 PDF download, and I've included a link to it in this week's blog entry at bethestory.com. Just look for the blog entry dated February 20th, 2006, entitled Great Characters and How to Make Them. Next week, I'm going to look at favorite classic story games. These may not all be games that you can readily get your hands on if you haven't played them before, but if you have played them, maybe we can reminisce together. And if you haven't played them, then you still might be interested in seeing what makes a good story game work. So that's next week on Be the Story. I'll see you then.